welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I have two very special guests here for a wee, I don't know, I guess you can't really call it a panel if it's on, if it's only three people or something. Panel's like, I don't know, four people or whatever. I don't know. I'm the host. These guys are my guests. We have two fellas, one of them known as Frank Zero. From Project PsyCube.blogspot.com and Jeremy, otherwise known as Violator Hellspawn. No, he doesn't work for David Rockefeller. From the StygianPort.wordpress.com. All right, so that's the StygianPort.wordpress.com and Project PsyCube.blogspot.com. Jeremy and Frank, welcome to the program. So, Frank, let's start with you.
Thanks for having us, Vinny.
And then Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, if I could get a brief explanation of just who it is you are and what it is you do, that would also be quite lovely for those who perhaps don't know. Frank?
Surely. My name's Frank Zero. I do a lot of research in different areas, and right now I'm working on a comic book called A-Star, which is going to, in some ways, intersect with Peter Moon's work and a lot of different diversified ideas. But that's my main project right now. And then we have some books coming together, one of them which is going to be called or primarily based on contact, different types of alien or transdimensional contact and stuff like that. And I work with Violator and some other fellows in PsyCube on just a bunch of different projects kind of revolve around, I guess, aliens, mind control. I've done some work in the Sync book, too, on cartoons. Just a lot of diverse stuff.
And Violeta?
Yeah, actually, speaking of the Sync book, where I was in the Sync book part one, and Frank is in the Sync book part two, and you can get those at syncbookpress.com. And it's, I think you've had probably some of the other authors on your show, or you will the rest of this week. But there's 26 unique authors in each book, and there's going to be a part three out, hopefully next year. And besides that, mostly I watch too many movies, and as a result of that, I kind of see a lot of connections and subtext and themes, mostly mythological, and which may or may not be intentional, and I kind of piece that all together on my blog and in my videos and share my derangement with the world.
Yeah, I think I watch too many movies. I see subtext in everything. Like I think I even saw a subtext in The Hunt for Red October.
It could be there.
It was kind of a literal subtext. Anyway.
Yes. Just about anything, really.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the scary part, is that you don't really know. I have a movie by some small-time, you know, independent filmmakers, and they don't really know the rules, I guess. And in their sort of commentary, they tell you it's their whole movie's about George Bush's presidency, which there was no clue of during the entire movie. It was a horror movie. And the only clue would really be that the main character was named George. So you really don't know what the filmmakers have in mind and what the actual story being told is a lot of the time.
I think it's better when you need to fetch some of the bigger clues. And that leads to, you know, just sort of searching in general and an attraction, mystery and things. And films like, I guess, Beyond the Black Rainbow or Pan's Labyrinth or something like that, more modern films that lay that out directly are bringing us in a new, more interesting direction, I think. But that really reflects older films' ability to space things out and make you think about things and include things in the background or in the subtext.
Yeah, I saw an older film called Death Wish with Charles Bronson the other day. Have you ever seen it?
I'm sad to say that I haven't.
Really good film. It was a 1974 one where he kind of, his wife and daughter get roughed up by these hoods or whatever. He winds up getting himself a gun and going out being a vigilante killer, you know, just hoping that he gets mugged and then he shoots all the muggers kind of thing. Great film. especially in this climate of gun control. Anyway, the movie opens up of them walking onto a black and white tiled floor into the lobby of their building, and the address is 33 Riverside.
Might be a bit direct.
Mm. I thought that was interesting. For sure. I took some screenshots there. And I try to do that whenever I'm watching films now. I'll take screenshots of the Masonic references, Masonic numbers, and things like that. And those are just the things that I'm aware of. There's probably a whole bunch of other things that have escaped my attention thus far. But, you know, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I think there's
Unfortunately, I have like, gigabytes of, well, probably not that much, but I do have a lot of pictures taken from movies, screen captures, and notes. I'll have to whip out a notebook sometimes watching a movie because I know I'm going to forget it. And it's just, there's so much stuff. So I can consider it research and not just watching movies.
That's how a convenient excuse.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's something valuable in being able to point out to other people the connectedness. And there's something really devaluing in, I guess, what's largely like a YouTube movement and on some blogs and websites where, like, everything is definitely the Illuminati or the Masons and every all-seeing eye is something to get worked up over. And the inclusion of those things that are sort of poignantly conspiracy-related, I think, is very different from the ability to, I guess, use synchromysticism as a tool in your life and then specifically to apply it to films and show people that there's this massive connective tissue, whether in some cases it's intentional or not. And then that's kind of what I try to do with the Tumblr account. I think I might have thrown you. It might be in the chat group related to Beyond the Black Rainbow. But just films like Dark City, 13th Floor, Beyond the Black Rainbow, sort of the X-Men mythologies, whatever, I found a way to just sort of put the images right next to each other. So you're repeatedly seeing, well, it's very direct that in movies like 23 and the other movies I mentioned, Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington, just as an example, you have in all those films someone literally up against a wall, usually covered in a bunch of what looks like mania-inspired writing, trying to rip down the walls of their reality. And in there, I give an example. I have a frame of each where the lead actor or someone the lead actor is talking to is having basically an identical conversation about being locked in a labyrinth or about seeing synchronicities and having recognition of patterns, but going immediately insane over it. And this is something that films like Dark City and 23 always seem to Star of Echoes, always seem to ring true. When the person becomes good at recognizing patterns, this is synonymous with immediately going insane and killing your wife and killing random people, losing memories of it and all this stuff. So I think that people need to come to a not-so-media-inspired understanding of synchromysticism and pattern recognition, and I think that showing the connectedness is one of the things that's kind of birthed through all this other research and in some cases worry. Now we're seeing something we can work with that's more of a mythology, you know, or a language.
See, I never think that it's obviously put there. Or even if I can't come up with any other explanation, it's just like the universe really messes with everybody at all times, depending on what you're interested in, I think. And whatever you're looking for, you'll find in every place you look, really. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Definitely. Sometimes, you know, it's intentional and sometimes not. But, yeah, everyone's got their own subjective view of the world, you know, their own tinted glasses. And that's like if I'm researching Gnosticism and I watch science fiction, every science fiction movie is going to be Gnostic. And I'm just going to be blown away by it. But, you know, no one else will probably see that unless they are researching, you know, oppression or something and draconian societies. And they'll see that in those movies.
Yeah, I definitely see.
Although you could
a lot of science fiction.
Probably draw some parallels between the Gnostic deity Yahweh as putting us in sort of a matrix and tyrannical societies.
Yeah, you tell somebody this and they're like, no way, and I'm like, Yahweh.
Yeah, Yahweh, man. if you wanted to see a movie with Masonic symbolism, check out The Man Who Would Be King with Sean Connery. Have you seen that?
No.
It's basically two Masons who are in the military in some, you know, old-timey British kind of movie, and they escape to Africa, and they wreck the African tribe there, wherever that is they go, recognizes their Masonic pin as like the symbol of God, and it was because some Masons had gone there before and built, you know, a pyramid or whatever the case was, and they were like revered as gods until I think one of them like cut himself or showed himself to be human, and the gig was up.
And then Hollywood Insiders did a really prolific job of cross-referencing that with Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and The Road to El Dorado in scene-by-scene comparisons. And that's for lack of a better term. I believe there's one individual at Hollywood Insiders that's doing all that. I just haven't updated who that is. But that's a website where you can track down a lot of these films that some of them have kind of a weird religious tint to the way they're defining demons and things like that, and but otherwise seems to be rather well informed about aspects of magic and aspects of a lot of different worldly mythology, and then goes and uses that film as basically a backbone to reach out to all these other films and show the exact likenesses.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of psychopathy, and how if you're psychopathic, you've got no creativity, and so you have to steal other people's ideas and or keep rehashing them or whatever, because you can't come up with anything new.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens, I think, as a process of just kind of foddering out a lot of psychopathic media. And so when you're trying to cross-compare a lot of different, whether it be modern movies or music or video games or whatever, you're going to run into a lot of pathological tendencies, but I believe they can be seen in the corporate, you know, sector in a more immediate and effective way. And you can argue consciousness all day, but I think what we're doing is kind of piecing together different parts of, I guess, what you could call just random unconscious material and some propaganda or psyops or whatever like that. And that gets into some really dark stuff. So if you're working with that material or films, they're always about that. You know, you're going to, like I was saying about 23 in Dark City, you're going to come off looking a little dark and scary.
Well, I do think, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of ignore, like I was saying, like you never know what the movie's really about. So why bother in most cases? I just kind of take what I can tell a story with and string them together, what shows a common theme. One of my videos, the first videos I made was, called Death and Dairy, and it shows all these basically synchronous scenes of someone drinking a glass of milk, usually out of the milk carton out of the fridge, and killing someone or being killed like immediately before or after. It's like in so many movies, it's ridiculous. I don't know how anyone's never pointed it out before, but there's definitely some symbol there being represented intentionally in these movies. And that's just one to look for, one of very many.
I've always wondered about this. In the last decade, how many end-of-the-world films have there been? Whether it's the end of the world via zombie apocalypse or viral outbreak or asteroid or a tyrannical regime or something like that. It seems like they come out, I don't know.
I think it's uncountable. You know, I think it's definitely a scenario that the human mind keeps trying to rework. If there's any validity to the idea of, you know, timelines, I can definitely believe that in the media and in the unconscious, we're trying to refigure out the puzzle of, you know, the end times or time when a lot of, you know, high energy stuff is going on. It gets confusing or very dangerous or whatever. And I think it's also just a great launching point probably for a whole bunch of writers who just want to start with anything from a clean slate to a world they can destroy with the opinions and problems they have with our society, you know.
Well, see, also, I always wonder what the mentality is behind filmmakers who make end-of-the-world films, whether or not they actually enjoy seeing the destruction and death and horrific nature of humanity being wiped out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certain researchers have made a good point about predictive programming and a lot of the idea of if they're going to work out scenarios in the real world, they'll use, you know, psyops like to affect the mass opinion. But I think that starts to lose its footing once you see that a lot of this stuff doesn't really work out. And we haven't really seen a million atomic or zombie-related apocalypse scenarios we have experience with. We're more just kind of going on people's words about 300 ways it can end. And that's really a bunch of worrisome stuff. I'm not saying to not inform yourself on what could go wrong, But I think people get obsessed with, you know, seeing people being tortured or seeing cars being blown up or whatever. And that becomes a valid argument for, well, if you're filling your entertainment world with that and you live in a bunch of, you know, posh, air-conditioned apartments and houses, but you allow your country to do things like that with foreign policy, whatever, and you can't put down the films but can't interest yourself enough to change the policies that are actually hurting people severely in the real world, there's something kind of fucked up there.
A lot of times when
we can't use the F word or any of the other seven words that you can't say on radio.
My apologies.
Yeah, and I'm terribly sorry to the listeners who just got offended. I'm sorry if you're under 18. What are you doing listening to this broadcast? And also to the FCC affiliates and things of that nature. And it's at times like these that I want to remind the FCC that the way we think about you and the way you regulate our free speech is just to say, well, F you. We'll be right back after the break with Frank Zero and the Violator Hellspawn known as Jeremy. In just a few minutes.
The way it's going to be.
Never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I am not a credible journalist. I'm an incredible journalist, which means I have had no training of any kind. Which usually means, as a result, I'm not brainwashed into thinking that lying, misrepresenting facts, and being your friendly neighborhood douchebag reporter is a good thing. Although I do have to consider myself in that way. My very special guests, Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, aka Jeremy. Welcome back, guys. Now, before we were talking, over the break, we were talking about fracking and how it's actually a lot more offensive than the word that is often used as a cover-up for it, if you know what I mean, the F-word. Because at least when you're doing the proper F-word thing, it's consensual. When you're being fracked, on the other hand, it's not quite so good. Anyway.
Yeah, there was a documentary. I don't even remember what it was called.
Gasland.
But it was Gasland. Yeah, that was, and it was the one where in Colorado, which thankfully wasn't where I was at the time, where people were pouring gas out of the tap water and lighting it on fire. I also had a friend, actually my only friend of my drinking buddy. He worked for an oil company, and his job was to go around the world, like checking the meters or whatever. And he's like, yeah, that fracking stuff. They're kind of blowing it out of proportion. You never really know. I mean, sometimes, you know, people on the truther side kind of exaggerate things, and
we're an excitable bunch.
Yeah. Sometimes people get onto the, you know, the 2012 thing or whatever the case is, and take it a little too extreme.
Yeah, I remember I was talking with one of my mates who I think he bought me this Mac here that I'm using, and he was telling me back in the day, I think, maybe halfway through 2012, about Comet Elenin that's going to come in and blow up everything and whatever. Right. And he's still sitting there smoking cigarettes and having the top shelf liquor and all of that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, dude, what are you? If you really believe that this is coming, why aren't you doing anything different? Why haven't you sold up your business? Why haven't you quit your job? You know, why haven't you done any of this stuff? As he's utterly convinced that we're all about to die very, very soon. And I don't know about you guys, but every time I've ever heard a prediction, it hasn't panned out.
Right.
Unless it's not a prediction and it's simply a recitement of what somebody's planning to do, like a criminal's planning to do a hit on a bank or something like that, and you tell the cops that, and the cops are there waiting for him, and sure enough, the criminal comes along and tries to hit the bank.
There is usually a good prediction. That's if the government's holding a terrorism drill, there's going to be an act of terrorism at the same time. That's one good way to find something happening before it happens.
Also, if there's a disaster relief drill, there's often a earthquake or a tsunami or something.
Interesting.
Like the Boxing Day tsunami, that was during a disaster relief drill. I think during the Christchurch earthquake that we had down here in New Zealand, there was a disaster relief drill going on with the New Zealand military. They had 1,000 troops and a ship full of supplies and stuff like that in the harbour at the time of the quake. And incidentally, 9 US congressmen and the head of FEMA, who stepped on a plane 2 hours before the quake hit, except the head of FEMA who stayed behind.
Huh.
Isn't that really nice to have
that's
federal
quite a coincidence.
Yeah. There's umpteen coincidences about the Christchurch earthquake. And there's incidentally a HAARP facility not 15 kilometers from the city.
Wow. Yeah, those are like all over the world, unfortunately. Mm. And who knows what they're doing with them.
Yeah. But anyway, comic books. Have you heard of the comic Judge Dredd?
Surely, yeah.
Have you read any of this?
Yeah, a lot of the just ranging stuff from over the years. I tried to pick it up when it just had different writers or artists and check it out. I'm in no way aficionado on that title, but definitely read some.
Because I've watched the new Judge Dredd film,
uh-huh.
And as a truther watching that, you just think, whoa, that's total Agenda 21. It's like everything that they say, you know, everybody's going to be locked into mega cities, going to be living in mega blocks along transport routes and stuff like that. There's going to be no work for anybody, like 97% unemployment or whatever. Everybody's just going to be slaves and the cops will be just ruthless fascists who can just, you know, execute you on the spot or whatever. You basically got no rights as a citizen, that kind of thing. It's like, whoa. It's a very cool film.
Yeah, I haven't seen the newer one. Yeah. The one in the 90s had a lot of pretty poignant items in it, and it could be kind of compared with Demolition Man, because they, I think, are trying to run the same ideas home. And if I remember correctly, it's a lot of RFID kind of stuff and super soldiers policing, you know, a lot of problems at home, including a whole, you know, race of people that basically don't have money to have a normal quality of life and things, so...
Demolition Man, the one with James Woods, like running an underground like anarchist society or something? Like,
no, you think? No, it wasn't James Woods. It was another comedian, Dennis Leary.
Was it him?
Yeah. I want freedom. If I want to eat bacon and butter and cheese, and right? If I want to run down the street with green jello all over my body, I want to be able to do it. You know, that kind of thing.
Impressive.
I have seen that film a number of times. It's a really good one. And I think I only watched it once after learning about RFIDs and the future planning
for
society.
You know what, speaking of RFIDs, have you ever seen the movie Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson?
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning, he, in his taxi cab, you know, thing where he's talking about whatever random conspiracies, it's all ad-libbed by him. He just made it up on the spot, apparently, and it wasn't in the script. And he says, oh, what do you got, a dog there? It's got one of those new RFID chips. They're going to be putting those into humans soon, you know? And he's this lone conspiracy nut, you know? What's he know? Meanwhile, some places you have to get a chip to get in the VIP room of a club and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am really concerned about this, is that you have this element of what's called preconditioning or pre-programming. Are you guys familiar with this?
Yeah, predictive programming ideas.
Right. I mean, to what extent?
Well, there's no way to really, I guess, discern that. I was about to use the example of Lawnmower Man 2. That's another really, you know, a character just goes off on a really long, very well illustrated rant where, of course, he uses the term New World Order and things, but he's talking about hooking everyone up to a central system that functions with a whole bunch of electronics in the city, and a much more complicated, I guess, idea of a grid than we have now. And there was a commercial, I think it came out like a week ago, from some like traffic light company that evolved into basically the same speech. But I mean, the RFID thing it's very confusing and concerning. It's another one of these things that the media seemed more interested in getting us to totally familiarized with in the 90s than we've even seen proof of actually becoming a nightmare scenario where, you know, everyone's marched with 666, whatever. So as many times as someone is freaked out about that, there's still just all this media behind it. And yes, there are all these corporations that have gone out of their way to advance this technology and in the private sector and things like this. But I don't know, it's just kind of up in the air now. Except for the fact that I keep running home that they definitely put it in the cartoons and the films, and I see it over and over, and it's worded in very similar ways. They usually use the same actors in the same kind of movie. Sometimes you'll see a bad guy go to a good guy or whatever, but the film will still include the same kind of long rants and parables about, you know, technocratic idealist futures and things like this.
And not just films. You have George Orwell's 1984, published in 1949, that had telescreens in everyone's room that was listening to you and watching you. And, you know, Everyone Loves Big Brother. The two-minute hate, you know, we have to hate Bin Laden, pictures of Bin Laden on, you know, CNN or whatever. It goes back that far, even.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nick Redfern's done a really good outline in his book, Science Fiction Secrets. And there's a bunch of other places, I guess, you could point people who have... for people who have kind of chronicled either people that were involved in the intelligence community or people who just had a very powerful intuition or some kind of unconscious link to a lot of this data.
Now, that brings rise to one of my great questions in life is, how much of science fiction is actually fiction?
Not much.
I've heard that military technology grows like 40 years for every one normal year of civilian technology, which puts them, since Roswell, at like 2,000 years ahead of us or some ridiculous number.
So they've got like an iPhone. They've got like an iPhone 2000 or something.
Basically, yeah. You know, I mean, who knows? Like the triangle shaped craft people see when they see UFOs that gives them radiation poisoning. In the most likely scenario, it's not an alien using antiquated nuclear technology. It's a military spy plane run with nuclear propulsion that no one officially knows about, except maybe in the case of submarines.
There is the other element as well that... have you heard of the theory that aliens or the UFO phenomenon is a big kind of scam to get people afraid of off-world threats, when the reality is it's just... classified technology that people don't know? Because when they say look at UFO, they firstly don't know exactly what they're looking at. How could they assume who the pilot is?
I'll let you take this one, Frank.
Yeah, sure. I think that the whole phenomenon is so multifaceted, and I think that there's a divide between the UFO and the abduction phenomenon that's unnecessary, and then there's a divide between abduction and mind control that is proven to be symptomatic of all the things that people feel in linear order in the abduction process. It gets more confusing when you see that linear order predates, you know, almost history, or contact with these kind of beings has gone on forever, but that there certainly is proof that the intelligence community and other interested organizations was really steering the New Age movement, the UFO cults, from the start, and still are today, largely in many ways. So it's meant to be extra confusing and layered. I think people make it more complicated than it needs to be. I think people who approach this field need to be more well-rounded. And we have a lot of people who can spout off the different UFO events or something like that, and that they're invested in the History Channel shows and things like that. And I think that's good to build interest. But the field, if it's going to take itself seriously or whatever, and have some sort of baby steps towards science or really deconstructionist scientific thinking, if that makes any sense, it's going to have to reorganize itself with a lot of this ancient data and a lot of the data on mind control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does a bit. Like, even if something's real or imagined, you can still use it to convince people to do things that you want them to do anyway, right?
Right.
Surely, yeah. That's like the sort of angle to it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and who's to say that almost everything is a psyop, you know? Somebody told me once, oh, Vinny, you think everything's a conspiracy. And I said, no, not everything's a conspiracy, just most things.
I like Jacques Vallée's take on aliens as being interdimensional beings, but in an interview, he's talking about the Bay of Pigs invasion, where the plan was to project an image of Jesus that would speak in Cuban dialect Spanish to the island of Cuba and tell them, hey, I'm back, so that they would fill up the airwaves and the telephone lines with all this calling, and then the invasion would be a little more secretive when it hit the shores. And the interviewer was like, are you kidding me? He's like, oh, we had the technology back then. It would be pretty easy. And this was like a guy working with NASA and the government, so he would know.
It would be interesting. Jesus appears in the cloud.
Hey, put down your rifle. Everything's going to be okay.
But then you have, a regular, let's say, UFO sighting, and the government could come in and change it to whatever they want, or the media, or whoever. You never really know what the origin is, what the purpose is, and then what the story is that you get from people on the internet or the TV.
Well, there's Project Bluebeam as well. I think I'm not sure if that was declassified or something. I heard that it's a network of satellites or something of that nature that have holographic projection technology on them around the Earth. That they're allegedly going to use at some point for a staged alien invasion.
Yeah, that would be used either for a staged alien invasion or for some extremist fundamentalist religious swaying, which would probably function largely, but I don't think that's really a thing. I think it was mostly
one of those things that got blown out of proportion. I think can't even see it. Like even the Jesus thing for the Bay of Pigs. I mean, really, we're not, in the middle.
The realities, right? The realities of the way they do take care of that kind of stuff, according to what history we can get, seems rather far removed from exotic Jesus plants. I guess unless you get into psychotronics and evangelical movements and things, but that's a little nuts.
There is that guy, Andrea Puharik, who worked with Uri Geller channeling, the Egyptian Ennead. And he actually invented the hollow tooth transmitter where you can pick up noises. He did it for deaf people. Like there's, modern day patents that are similar, but don't require a tooth transplant. But, there's people in mental hospitals. That's the famous original conspiracy theory thing, is that they're hearing voices through a hollow tooth transmitter that was implanted in when they got knocked out going to the dentist or whatever. And that's an actual thing. It could theoretically actually happen.
Well, I saw an episode of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. I think it was the HARP episode. And they were claiming that HARP could actually tune into the same frequency that your brain cells communicate at, like a certain number of hertz or whatever. And they had this little device with these two pads that they put on his throat. And he could hear the music through this device as if it was inside his own head. It really freaked him out. I was just wondering, if you could turn that up. Maybe you could speak to the whole planet as one, I thought that would be very interesting. Anyway, we'll be right back. Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy, are my guests at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can even join us in the chat room there if you can. Just search Vinnie Eastwood Chat. Back in two.
I got some so-called friends.
Who shoot me in the face. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of cops that shoot you point blank even though you're pinned to the ground and you can't frickin' move, and cops that push you over when you're a 15-year-old girl walking away from a party that's not really that out of control and loses her two front teeth, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts and your two front teeth. My very special guests are Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy. Now, there was something about aliens you wanted to say? Contact books?
One of our upcoming projects that we're working on is a book called Contact, which will come out through Sync Book Press. And basically, it's our kind of compiling of our data on the ufology subject, which I didn't really pay attention to very much until very recently. It wasn't until I was researching, I don't know what you call it on the internet. So I was wasting time on the internet reading about trip reports of people on DMT and ayahuasca, and I read a holographic universe, and there was a trip report in there, and I started seeing all the stuff about reptilians and mantis people, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I heard that from ufology. So it wasn't until DMT became super popular that I really actually paid attention to ufology. Now I see where the connections are there, and hence my theory that they're not all physical aliens, or perhaps any of them are physical aliens.
Have you heard the theory that they might be demonic entities?
Oh, God, I just watched a movie called Illuminati Conspiracy, where basically if you couldn't see it, it was demonic. Gravity? Demonic. Electromagnetism? Demonic.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, sounds like a Keanu Reeves movie, like Johnny Demonic.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was Johnny Mnemonic. Anyway.
Constantine, you're close enough, I suppose.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that movie a number of times, Constantine, and more times than I would have liked, in fact. Like, it actually, the movie now annoys me for some reason.
Weird. It's interesting. I mean, I like the way when he crosses over, everything's identical at that moment. So there's buildings and freeways and stuff, you know. Just, like, think about that. Like, we're affecting the spirit world by building buildings. You know, do these things cross over? Can they see all 10 dimensions and we could only see 3 and they keep going, where the hell are these buildings coming from?
That would be quite funny. You know, I think the demons and what have you in the next dimension would be like, hey, hold on a second, didn't Twin Towers used to be there?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on here?
They're having their own war of terror in hell right now.
Yeah. Wait, what? Yeah. It would be quite a terrifying war.
With most things, you can get a lot more information. It's just a lot greater work in the form of the comic. But I think the movie is challenging to, you know, people's paradigms and does have some interesting aspects to it that are Hellblazer-like. So.
Now, also, in terms of aliens and what have you, what I've found is what mainstream media does is they use people's belief in aliens or any group of people to just kind of tar everybody else with a brush. Like, we had Michael Laws, he's kind of like the Rush Limbaugh of New Zealand yesterday, was in the car, incidentally, demonizing chemtrail people and saying, oh, it must all be due to do with extraterrestrials and whatnot. It's like, what do chemtrails have to do with extraterrestrials at that particular moment? You know, it's just guilt by associations and sort of thing. And is if you believe in aliens and you ain't seen one, are you a little bit nuts or what?
I think that a lot of this has to do with the really prompt need to change terminology. So anything that's challenging academia as it is self-defined in the moment somehow is you know, related to the tinfoil hat wearers or something like this. And terms like, you know, go run and get your tinfoil hat or something like this, where people want to berate you with this for reading stuff that everybody else isn't reading or, you know, alternative views on things, is really interesting because it's kind of an answer all. You know, if you're in a group of people and someone says you're the tinfoil hat, the conversation's over. And people do find it really funny if you're in a stuff that they don't take the time to have an actual interest in. They'll keep trying to change the subject to something funny or whatever. So it has to deal with how much are conspiracy theories actually involved in our lives? How much are they actually affecting us? Besides all the fear porn and the conspiratainment and the exotic conspiracy theories that people might not have a lot of proof of, and then how can we kind of change our system of looking at things? Well, our chakra systems and Tai Chi and martial arts, is that kind of stuff important, or is that just new age, you know, hooey anyway? And can we start integrating that into the physical body and the way, you know, we look at lives, our lives every day, and the way we have social contracts or whatever? Or are we going to keep seeing things through, I guess, you know, like we were talking about before, over violent or over sexualized media or something like that?
Couple of things. I mean, acupuncture is now respected by the American Medical Association, and hypnosis was originally an occult, you know, table rapping, you know, kind of world where people were discovering, you know, doing miraculous healings, and they thought it was attributed to magnetism or something, and it was hypnotism, and they had no idea, and it became this sort of underground thing that they decided to pull out into the realm of regular science, which almost doesn't make sense if you think about it. It's not a non-physical, you know, science. Up until very recently, the brain was just, you know, a machine, an adding machine or whatever they had back in the day when they came up with these theories. But a lot of things you make.
On that same vein, psychiatry doesn't fit into that mold either.
Yeah, well, it's all around a complete misconception of the mind-body connection. And then, oh, I'm going to get a massage, or I'm going to get my Reiki treatment or whatever to sound cool in a party of people. It's a completely disconnected thing from, oh, there's something wrong with me. There's dis-ease in my mental system. Therefore, there's physical disease. I need to get to a doctor right away. There's such a huge disconnect there, I think, between, I guess, the Western and Eastern world and older cultures and stuff, that it's really embarrassing that I guess we've let ourselves be with psychiatry and with medical conditions, the whole thing, let it become so clinical and so disconnected from the person in such a weird regimented process.
I just read something about the same date that Karl Ratzinger just stepped down as Pope was like that in that history. It was Benjamin Franklin founds the first hospital in America. And people think, well, wait a minute, did people not get sick before that? No, there weren't, medical establishments, which is today the number one killer of people in the civilized part of the world.
Yeah, and that was really funny. It happened in New Zealand. We started introducing this food bill legislation to save people from poisoned or contaminated food. And it was going to be like real draconian, Blackwater employees or Monsanto employees will be immune from prosecution, will be able to come onto your property armed if you're like giving seeds to your neighbor or something like that. And what was interesting, you look into the statistics of it, how many people died from foodborne illnesses last year? Oh, I think it was 6. How many people died from medical treatments?
Hundreds of thousands.
No, 6,000. And this is just in New Zealand, a country of 4 million people. And that's just the reported ones. That doesn't include the vast number of unreported things. Like, I think maybe only 10 to 15% of bad vaccine reactions or things of that nature really get listed as the right. Actual cause of the medical industry. So goodness knows, they could be killing more people than all the other causes of death combined.
Sure they are. I added it up once, just all the ones that were officially listed, and it came out to the third killer of Americans, at least, behind, like, high blood pressure and I don't know, whatever else. And there's so many things. And I always go back to the cannabis legislation. Why is marijuana illegal when peanut allergies have killed more people in 1 year than marijuana ever has? The law of making doesn't make sense.
Yeah, see, I always thought that we needed a war on peanut butter.
Right. Oh, God, I hope not. I eat so much peanut butter.
Drop the jar! Drop the jar!
Might be an adequate distraction if you have enough extremist jelly fans to go head-to-head and kind of work it out over a large political campaign.
It's a new Democrat and Republican peanut butter and jelly party.
But they can't go together for some reason. They just sit there apart trying to do the same processes as one.
Yeah.
I think we successfully derailed the show.
With some description of satay lobbyist. I don't know what's going on here with the there's so much crap going on in our society. And to be honest, guys, I've been totally detached from it for some time. Like I've cut out idiots from my life. I just barely ever meet any of them anymore. I'm only really talking with intelligent people and things like that. So I think I'm getting kind of intellectually myopic, as it were. Like I only care about talking about things that matter. Is that a bad thing?
It is if you want to have friends.
Yeah, exactly. So it just divides you from, that classic music video idea of everybody walking against you, even if they're your friends and family. As stupid and extreme and like personal or, whiny as that sounds, I'm saying it is a general thing that applies to people who are victims, whistleblowers, conspiracy theorists, researchers, academics in this field, and all kind of stuff like that. It's really, can you go back and have a conversation with people who are, just really into self-indulgence or only into talking about sort of really, I guess, closed circuit ideas, so like football and the commercials that play in between it? Or would you, I guess, are there these people just isolate themselves with conspiracy theories or with the art or whatever, which is definitely rather eccentric, but I think it might be more constructive. I think that we've been playing sports and beating each other up and having wars and making love or whatever throughout the history of mankind, it might be more constructive, especially if there's science, that these are telling times or changing times or important times. We could maybe change what we're doing about that, not just sit around in a bar or something, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do understand that there's important things that you can do in your life. And what most people do is they distract themselves from those important things by saying, look, having a roof over my head and doing what I'm told and sitting in an office for 8 hours a day and being stuck in traffic for 2 hours a day so that I'm too tired to take care of my kids is actually the most important thing I should be doing right now. And all of those other things that I want to do in my life, like write a book or change the frickin' world, is just a pipe dream and I should just be a slave. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.